Previously on Forever Chemicals.
We got an inside look at how European companies were ahead of the curve when it came to phasing out PFAS in their production, and how the outdoor industry can better align with sustainability efforts across the globe.
If I start with what is PFAS? PFAS is a very big group of fluororganic chemicals and polymers. They have what are called extraordinary properties.
PFAS are industrial chemicals, and the carbon-fluorine bond is perhaps the strongest in the periodic table. It takes the energy of lightning to break it.
PFAS are known as forever chemicals.
The chemical industry knew that PFAS could be harmful.
So it's used in places that folks don't think. It's in every pizza box that you've gotten a pizza in. It's in your coffee cup at your favorite coffee joint around the corner. It's in cosmetics. You know, it's everywhere.
PFAS chemicals are wreaking havoc on our health and environment.
It's a really serious issue.
So there's health impacts and there are environmental impacts.
So many of them have been found to last essentially on geologic time.
Difficult to remove, difficult to filter, and then once removed and filtered, difficult to dispose of. They have been found to bioaccumulate in people and animals, and have been found in almost every living creature on Earth.
We need to eliminate our apparent appetite for using PFAS.
The environmental impacts are pretty potent. Many of us refer to these as forever chemicals. Forever chemicals. Forever chemicals. Forever chemicals.
Forever chemicals. Mr. Ranch has been around for about 24 years, started in 2000. Really started as a project to build backpacks that essentially fulfilled three functions: excellent load carriage, great accessibility, and then packs that were built with quality in mind, which is our three most important principles. Since my career started, I guess in 2008, I've never seen any shakeup like this where every brand in the industry, I mean, across industries, have to make such a big change. And that really opens the door for a lot of really great new ideas and kind of a scramble to come up with what the new cool thing is. I'm really excited about that, as well as, you know, the notion of circularity. A lot of talk around circulating products and materials kind of at their highest value is a really interesting idea. Some industries are ahead of others. I think the outdoor industry is maybe one of the leaders in that space. We have a lot of really great brands that are focused on excellent repair and warranty programs, to resale programs, to helping their customers find ways of like end of life solutions. So really like the idea of keeping products in use longer, circulating them to people who need them when maybe someone else doesn't. That to me is like really exciting. That's kind of what gets me fired up these days, I guess you could say. My name is Greg, and I'm the Sustainability Program Manager at Mr. Ranch, based here in Bozeman, Montana. I've been a rancher since 2022, and I'm super proud to be the first full-time employee focused on our environmental impact.
As we learned in earlier episodes, phase-out and regulatory efforts for PFAS were not swift, and they certainly are not complete. However, because of the recent regulatory changes on consumer goods, specifically in California, many U.S.-based outdoor brands and chemical companies have finally committed to removing PFAS from their products.
Historically, 3M was one of the biggest producers of PFAS in the U.S. and in the world. They are now phasing out its production. This is something they honestly should have done decades ago, especially when they began to phase out the long-chain PFAS, and instead they started producing other PFAS chemicals that are, in many cases, just as persistent, and in some cases, just as toxic or even more toxic. Unfortunately, other chemical producers like Chemours and Daikin have not yet followed suit, so we think companies like Chemours and Daikin need to step up and join 3M and commit to phase out the production of PFAS, especially when we know there are safer alternatives available for many uses of the most common uses of PFAS. At the same time, in recent years, we've seen some of the largest Fortune 500 companies in different sectors announce policies to phase out PFAS. For example, IKEA has phased out PFAS years ago in products like upholstered furniture and carpets and rugs that they sell. Home improvement chains like the Home Depot and Lowe's, in response to our engagement, have agreed to phase out the sale of carpets and rugs containing PFAS. We've won commitments from more than two dozen major grocery and fast food chains, companies like McDonald's and Burger King and Taco Bell, to phase out PFAS. And in the outdoor apparel industry, we're seeing some leading retailers and leading brands also agree to phase out PFAS in the products that they sell. Patagonia, for example, was a company that for some years were dragging their feet, but have finally committed to a clear date certain to phase out the use of PFAS in the products that they sell. Another company in the outdoor apparel industry that's a good example is Keen. They make a lot of popular footwear that folks in the outdoor industry use. Keen has eliminated PFAS in their products. And we're now beginning to see major outdoor retailers like REI and Dick's Sporting Goods follow suit. A couple of years ago, we launched a national campaign calling on REI to lead the outdoor apparel industry away from PFAS. As a company with a long commitment to the outdoors and sustainability, we thought that they would be the perfect company to take a leadership role on this issue. But unfortunately, it took a major national campaign coupled with enacting policies at the state level in Washington State and elsewhere, in conjunction with petitions that were signed by more than 150,000 REI customers and members, actions at their annual member meeting or leading up to their annual member meeting, and even protests in front of REI stores in places like their flagship stores in New York City and Seattle, Washington, that propelled REI to take action. With that said, we applaud REI for committing to phasing out PFAS, not only in the apparel that they sell, but other products as well. About 1 month later, after REI committed to taking action on PFAS, Dick's Sporting Goods followed suit. Dick's Sporting Goods also committed to taking action on PFAS in outdoor apparel and other products that they sell. So this is a growing corporate social responsibility trend that we're seeing in the outdoor apparel industry. Now, not every company has either eliminated PFAS or has committed to doing so. Certainly, there are laggards that are out there. One of the laggards that has not yet moved is Gore. Gore has produced Gore-Tex, which is made from PFAS chemicals, from PTFE, also known as Teflon. And to their credit, Gore has recently, as of a couple of years ago, introduced a new PFAS-free membrane to replace the PFAS membrane that they historically have offered their customers. Yet Gore continues to use PFAS in other applications, both in membranes and also in DWR applications. And Gore, of course, is a key supplier in the outdoor industry. And while they say that they are reducing PFAS of environmental concern, that's kind of an oxymoron. Honestly, all PFAS are of environmental concern because they're incredibly persistent. They don't go away. They can last or persist in the environment for decades, possibly hundreds, maybe even thousands of years. So we really need manufacturers, companies like Gore and chemical manufacturers like Chemours, to step up and join the growing market and corporate social responsibility trend away from PFAS. This is not only the right thing to do for our health and for our environment, but we also think it makes good business sense for companies like Gore. Increasingly, we're seeing that people in the outdoor industry that hike, like myself, we want to know that the products that we buy for our families are safe for not only us, but also for the communities and the workers where the products are made. And we don't want to buy gear that can leave behind a toxic trail of pollution that can contaminate the outdoor environment that we cherish. We're also seeing for companies that are not proactively managing PFAS risks, we're beginning to see class action lawsuits filed against companies that claim their products are environmentally friendly yet are laden with PFAS. We're also seeing more and more governments around the US and around the world enact policies to ban PFAS in products like apparel. The states of California and New York and Washington have enacted policies restricting PFAS in apparel. So this is a trend that's not going to go away. And companies that are not leading on this issue not only face regulatory liabilities and legal risks, but they also face reputational risks for selling products that most people don't want to support.
For better or for worse, commercial interests drive a lot of people's push one way or the other. Interestingly, these regulations, we're seeing them go into place where I am in Washington State.
We're seeing them in Illinois, Nevada, Hawaii, Massachusetts, Vermont, right? So they're coming through a lot of the states that you would expect to see them come through. And I guess if you really want to look at the rest, that's where you would probably say there's pushback, right? You're not seeing any of this happen in states like Texas and Florida. I guess they don't believe that it's as significant an issue as legislators within places like California.
As Mike mentioned, even large outdoor brands in the U.S. seem to be dragging their feet in regards to moving away from PFAS. But regulations have really moved the needle in a positive direction. Now that we have the momentum and knowledge needed to implement these changes, how are brands tackling this process?
My name is Alex Laver. I'm the Senior Director of Materials Innovation and Sustainability at Outdoor Research. The longer narrative here that we're going to tell, which is it's been prevalent in our product line as it has in many outdoor brands, given that it's a fairly quality and active ingredient in durable water repellency. So for many years, many of our water repellent and waterproof jackets have had some form of PFAS. If you go back to the definition of the highest level around a fluorinated polymer.
There are going to be some differences when you look at other brands that are making different products, such as waterproof breathables, probably require a higher level of scrutiny with what you do replace the chemistry with, just because it affects so many things like breathability, washability, things of that nature. Again, it was not an easy process. You're just not going to notice any possible degradation in that change on a backpack like you would with a waterproof breathable. I do work with a group through the OIA, which Mr. Ranch was a founding member of, and that was the Clean Chemistry and Materials Coalition. So we work with other outdoor brands in the industry, and we collaborate on phase-out planning, how that looks, avoiding regrettable substitutions. And what we don't collaborate on, again, is what you change that product to, because, again, there is still a healthy competition to be had in the outdoor industry, but we're all on the same page with making cleaner products, safer products, more compliant products. Because really, at the end of the day, that's what this is all about, is product safety and compliance.
And while a commitment to eliminating the use of PFAS in products has been happening recently, there was an earlier move away from long-chain PFAS to shorter-chain PFAS previously.
In 2005, 6, 7, 8-ish, there was a huge move in the industry to move away from C8-based DWRs, which is a different kind of PFAS or fluoropolymer than we are sort of used to using today with C6-based DWRs, which is clearly a different kind of PFAS in that sense. This is a different chemistry, a different chemical backbone than you would see in other categories, ski wax treatments, et cetera. And then some of the chemistries used, they're usually blends. They're not pure in stuff we use in rainwear or things we use to make membranes, things we might put on swimwear, outdoor furniture. Those are all probably, in most cases, I'm not a chemist, they're slightly different formulations. Each one of them could, in theory, be unique. And I think one of the things that listeners might find really interesting is that different types of formulations, I'm not saying PFAS there, I mean formulations specifically, they work differently with different kinds of textiles. They work differently with different fibers, poly versus nylon, big denier, small denier, that's like a big noodle, small noodle kind of terminology. They work differently. So in many cases, you may have several formulations of DWR throughout your product line.
As we learned in previous episodes, PFAS as a class of chemicals is quite extensive. And on top of that, it has a high contamination risk. So phasing it out of products is not an easy lift by any means.
We were aware of some of the legislation and some of the things happening fairly early. And I really give the leadership team here a lot of credit. They listened when we said, this might be a problem. We should start working on this. They didn't debate. They didn't wring hands. They didn't minimize. They're like, yeah, let's get started. Two things can be true at the same time. Number one is we had absolutely not enough warning as an industry to do this the way that I think the consumer and the listeners would want, which is the most perfectly engineered R&D innovative solution that zero loss of performance. Like, there is going to be a trade-off. So we were fairly quick at saying, all right, we know we have to move faster than we would want. We have to find a way to build prioritization. We have to do some risk analysis. We have to go through where we can control things and where we can't. And to the listener, I would say that comes around branded ingredients. I don't have any power to tell W.L. Gore, I want you to do this with your material, your DWR, your membrane, your whatever. You know, they come to me and go, this is our offering. versus an area where we go out and fly to Asia, sit in front of a mill, drink tea and say, hey, here's what we're working on. Do you think you could tweak this a little? Or what other chemistries do you have? Can I get some more information? We have a lot more ability to pick and choose. So in some cases, the WL Gore example, we just sort of said, well, what do you got? We're going to need to make some changes. And they're like, yeah, we're aware. So it was a faster ability of you either pick something or you don't, versus where we nominate a fabric. We work with those suppliers directly. There was a lot of R&D that had to happen. There was a lot of questions. Thankfully, PFAS free or not intentionally added PFAS, which doesn't roll off the tongue quite as cleanly. This isn't new. We have been talking about this within the industry for, I want to say a decade, 5+ years. I have been addressing this with suppliers as the head of our raw material supply chain for at least 5 years. But the technology really wasn't progressing very fast. When the legislation came out that said, thou shalt not sell this in California, technology sort of was what it was, right? So we had at least gotten to the point where there was some levels of understanding and some levels of performance. So what did we do? We very quickly set up a time scale and said 3 seasons really to go. Product development in apparel is 18+ months in some cases. So we really said, oh, well, it's January 1 of 2025. We were working on spring 24, fall 24 product at the time. We didn't have that much time to do a lot of R&D. We worked with outside legal counsel, which I should say clearly, and put together a strategy. And we're pretty proud to say, outside of a handful of exceptions, we will be free of intentionally added PFAS in our entire global product chain ahead of that Jan 125 deadline, which would be within the fall 24, spring 25 seasonal transition. Really proud of that. It was a big lift. It was a lot of work. It was working closely with our supply chain to evaluate options and say, we need to make some decisions and make changes. How can you help us? How can you support us?
Outdoor research is just one example, though, and every company is different in terms of resources, meaning their phase-out times may differ.
A lot of other brands are going to be in similar positions. You know, I'm going to lean here a little bit on my work with the Outdoor Industry Association and say that I'm certainly aware bigger brands, bigger resources, bigger legal teams may have been working on this a bit ahead and might have had some head start. I think brands at our level that took it really seriously, those early days were put into a pretty good position industry-wide, but I'm certainly working with and hearing from a significant number of brands who either weren't big enough to be aware of this, maybe didn't take it as seriously as they should have or could have, had actually received bad information or advice from somebody that it wouldn't affect them or that there were exceptions they could lean on, et cetera, that I think the legal community is now heavily advising bulks of the industry. Don't rely on some of those as a one-stop fix. So I think there is a pretty good chunk of the industry that's still very much behind the eight ball in terms of getting compliant or being ready to be fully compliant. You know, the supply chain that we're running into driving some of this. Oh, we don't have a big California business. Well, do you sell to somebody with a good website that sells on Amazon or one of those platforms? In some cases, you know, e-commerce is going to hurt your compliance if you're a small one-shop stop based in somewhere in the Eastern Seaboard, for example. Well, I don't know. If you're shipping into the state of California, congratulations. Some of this might apply to you.
PFAS in general, in the outdoor industry, and really in a lot of industries throughout the world, are used for many different functions, waterproofing, durability, heat resistance, et cetera. They work really well for what they're meant to do. For the most part, Mystery Ranch has used textiles that contain PFAS as a waterproofing agent. As a small company in the early 2000s, you know, Mystery Ranch was making hundreds, maybe thousands of packs at a time. And in those days, Mystery Ranch used a lot of available fabrics, right? So from mills, you know, making Cordura fabrics, and we essentially were picking kind of off the shelf. You know, nowadays, you know, we're making a lot more packs. We have the ability to specify exactly what all the different raw materials and components of every part on our backpacks. So through this kind of 24-year transition, we've been able to, I guess, select those raw materials, chemistries, et cetera. For a little bit more context, in the early 2000s, there were some really large chemical companies that kind of came under fire for, I guess, the disposal of their chemistries. And in those days in the outdoor industry, the big news was really transitioning from what was called a long chain DWR to a shorter chain DWR. And the thought there was these chemicals, if they found their way into the environment, would be less pervasive, would break down quicker, et cetera. But maybe 6-7 years ago, it kind of became apparent that that really wasn't the case. So a lot of kind of first adopter brands in the outdoor industry kind of started adopting what was at that time known as C0 chemistry, so no fluorocarbons. And that's where we kind of are today. When I came over to the ranch, one of the first things we did as a company in conjunction with the leadership team here is said, hey, let's look at all of our environmental impacts. And because we kind of had a view on what is going on in state governments or governments overseas, like Europe, we quickly realized that there was some risk in future regulations surrounding PFAS. And so that was, I guess, June of 22. We kind of did a whole audit of every material we use, and we use hundreds, if not thousands, of different materials from textiles to foams, et cetera. Quickly thereafter, in August, the EPA designated PFAS as a quote unquote harmful substance, kind of indicating a future ban would be coming. And shortly after, we saw that California adopted what's called California AB 1817. Essentially saying, you know, all PFAS were going to be banned as of 2025 or January 1st of 2025 in outdoor apparel and packs and bags, et cetera. So at that point, it kind of kicked us into overdrive in our assessment of all of our materials. And we really focused on those that we knew had water resistant coatings that would allow our packs and bags to shed, you know, dirt and oil and things like that, which PFAS chemistries work really well at. So full material audit, and then kicked off into advanced development with all of our mills, because in 2022, we were already working on products for 2025, if not fall 24 or whatnot. So we knew we had to act quick. While not easy, we were able to do it in kind of a pretty rapid fire way.
Where brands are selling their products can impact the level of compliance needed. But what about retailers? Are they liable under these regulations as well?
So if a retailer acquires a certificate of compliance from a brand, the retailer is exempt from the penalties of the law. And so what's interesting about that is not only is there a legal pressure to do the right thing and eliminate these chemicals, but there's actually customer pressure. We know companies already like REI and Backcountry, I believe Dick's and others, have already been asking brands to identify which of their products do and don't have PFAS. And that's because they're working as they should to protect themselves, as is provisioned in both the New York law and the California law. And if I had to guess, many other laws going forward. There's even a similar, though not identical, component of that in the EPA ruling. And so the idea is that you put the legislative pressure on, but then you also put customer pressure on manufacturers and brands to eliminate PFAS. And it's working.
Most outdoor brands, including industry giants like Patagonia, Columbia, and The North Face, have all announced that by the end of 2024, most of their products will be made without the use of intentionally added PFAS. Some brands may continue to include types of PFAS, such as PTFE, or it will take longer to phase those out. Certain brands that have contracts with the U.S. military may have longer timelines for phase-out in some of their products, but have committed to eliminating PFAS from consumer goods by 2025.
The first thing we did really is to reach out and talk to our suppliers who have all the experience with our materials that they make. So essentially, we asked, what materials do we use contain PFAS? What's your suggestion for replacing those with chemistries that do not contain PFAS, but still work to the degree that we need them to? You know, Mr. Ranch, we've always been focused on durability and quality, like I said before. So while these chemistries were changing, it also required us to relook at all of our standards, which essentially say, is this material fit to be used in our product? In a nutshell, vendor, what do you have to replace it? Can we make a sample? Send it to Bozeman. We're going to test it. We're going to build products, and we're going to go back and forth until we get it right. I'm really proud to say that the team has successfully transitioned out of all these materials. And, you know, starting in 2024, we launched several new products that were PFAS free, moving into fall 24 even more. And then by 2025, the goal at which we're on track to hit is 100% PFAS free. So Mystery Ranch, we have a broad assortment of products that we make, really separated into two categories we call Mountain and Mission. Mountain would be the backpacks for hunting and fishing, backpacking, everyday carry, things of that nature. And then Mission is our wildland firefighting and military. So those products have a different timeline. They can be classified as an exempt product, but regardless, it is something we are still transitioning out of for these products. We feel like the durability is going to be there for those customers that need it. It's just the right thing to do, and we will be 100% transitioned out at a point in 2025 as well.
As we learned in the last episode from Donna and Martin from Fjallraven, sometimes the materials and weaving of the fabrics themselves allows a product to be made without the use of chemicals like PFAS. In episode 96 of the Outdoor Minimalist podcast, I chatted with Teresa McKenney, the Director of Sustainability at Nemo Equipment, where she explained the development of their proprietary Osmo fabric and why it works without PFAS.
So Osmo was a big one. It took more than 2 years to develop the Osmo tent fabric. And, you know, a lot of tent fabrics are lightweight and strong, but they tend to absorb water and then they will stretch when they're wet. So to solve for that problem, we explored different combinations of things like yarn specification, weave structures, different coatings and finishes. And then we landed on a new proprietary base textile that we really felt was optimized for backpacking. So the Osmo maximizes performance, but it also reduces environmental impact along the way. But 2 years is a long time. And, you know, I've watched a couple pretty intense development cycles. Osmo was one of them. And we also have a camp chair that I remember, like, I had just started at Nemo. This was 8 years ago. And there were just like 200 little tiny paper chairs all over the office that, like, little origami almost looking chairs. And it can be a pretty long haul to go from an origami paper chair or a bunch of scraps on a table to a new proprietary fabric. But it just takes a really strong product and quality and operations team on our side, but also really strong partnerships with our vendors who we're co-creating these materials with. So during those 2 years of development of Osmo, which is the first poly nylon composite tent fabric, so that's polyester and nylon working together, we just discovered that that combo could improve performance. So nylon is lightweight and strong, and then polyester is stable, it doesn't stretch, and it doesn't absorb water. So by combining those in a composite tent fabric, it's harnessing the benefits of each of those material type. It starts more waterproof, it stays waterproof longer. And while we were going after that from a material type perspective, we were also thinking about sustainability. So the nylon and the polyester are both 100% recycled. And the way that the fabric is constructed and an additional coating meant that we didn't have to use durable water repellent chemistries like PFAS on the tent. And it also has no flame retardant chemicals on there. So in, you know, previous developments of tent fabrics, in order to meet waterproofness requirements and flame retardancy requirements, there were additional treatments done there. And sometimes those treatments had chemicals that were undesirable. And by changing the construction method of this tent and thinking about both performance and sustainability from the start, we were able to create a fabric that's 100% recycled, PFAS-free, flame retardant chemical-free. And not only that, it also just delivers better performance. So it's 4 times better with water repellency, stretches 3 times less when it's wet, and it has an exceptional strength at a reduced weight. So it was really important for us not to just go after performance, just sustainability, but both. The performance and sustainability balance is a lot more even than it used to be. But the sustainability pricing balance is still really challenging. And, you know, more often than not, when we're creating new products and having to make those decisions, the performance is there, especially for textiles like Osmo that we really put through a lot of rigor and actually perform better. But a lot of these sustainable materials just cost more, right? And then you're having to make decisions of, you know, I can have this fantastic product that is a BlueSign product and is 100% recycled and is PFAS free and is fair trade XYZ, but each one of those attributes has a cost to it, right? So I think that's more of the balance challenge. I'd say that performance is always the driver, because like, why make a product if it's not going to do the job? Like, why waste those resources to not have the best product you possibly can? But I think that, you know, we'll never sacrifice quality basically for anything is the goal. But that pricing and, you know, not only like thinking about your product margin, like how much of this are you going to make as a for-profit business off of the sale rate, but what are people willing and able to pay for, right? And I think that's where resale can be really exciting to get more people outside at a more attainable price point by building that circular economy and getting products to have a second, third life at a lower entry point is really exciting.
The PFAS journey for any brand doesn't and shouldn't end with the phase out, though. There is still work to be done, and there will continue to be necessary monitoring of production to ensure that products can truly be PFAS free.
Even after we're PFAS free, there's always going to be a certain degree of continued monitoring because there is such a thing as contamination, right? In the laws that have been adopted so far, which California really is the first, they have a certain threshold for how many, say, parts per million of a chemical can be in any given part. And it is a very small part. Say you have a mill who's making another customer's product that doesn't have to hold up to the same regulations yours does, and they are using PFAS. If the mill doesn't, say, wash out the dye stuff tank or any part in the supply chain comes in contact with yours, you could be at risk for contamination. So I think always monitoring that is going to be a challenge going forward. And then, of course, ongoing supply chain management, product testing, costs, really testing fatigue, things of that nature continue to be a challenge.
Even early adopters like Keen Footwear have realized that eliminating PFAS is not the end, and sharing their stories can become a tool other companies can learn from moving forward.
The thing about PFAS in particular is that you can't take your eye off the ball. And so, yes, we've been PFAS-free since 2018, but it's sort of a constant challenge, right? And so we have someone that we work with exclusively whose job it is to implement and make sure that all of our suppliers and facilities that we work with are complying. So we'll stay the course. That's definitely something that we're committed to. Additionally, we want to do what we can to educate or offer resources for other footwear manufacturers or really any manufacturers of consumer goods to know that it's doable and we all need to get on this bus. So we published a green paper originally in 2020 and we just updated it last year because, as you mentioned, there's so much sort of momentum and regulation and compliance specifically from the state level in the US. But we updated the paper to reflect those changes. And basically the paper is like a roadmap that talks about our journey, has links to our policies that we implemented, has PFAS-free DWR alternatives that we use. So basically it's kind of like an open source document for other brands to reference as they start their own PFAS journeys. It's just been an emotional realization that we've come to, right? Like, we've done our part to remove PFAS from our supply chain. We started this journey 10 years ago. We've been PFAS-free since 2018. And so we feel like we've done our part, but like, what else can we do? And can these communities, these people are and will continue to be affected by this? And so what else can we do?
One of the big kind of system aspects here is that the burden of proof is on the harmed. It's not on those who are potentially doing the harming. And so putting one's finger on the scale toward shifting the burden of proof that something is harmful or not harmful to the producer, which will increase their costs, hit their bottom line. But when we zoom out and we look at the finances of the whole thing, the families of the people who work in those companies, the shareholders, their personal bottom line is going to be negatively affected by them getting sick and health costs are going to increase. So my hope is that we can collectively as a society through companies playing a social benefit role and individuals speaking up that we can shift to a new type of economy, one that is health forward and ecology forward, recognizing that we're really all interconnected.
How we move forward as an industry and as a society is up to us. But not just up to us as consumers. It should primarily be up to us as producers. The industry has a choice in how we impact the earth. And the hope is that the burden of proof does not fall on the harmed, and that the responsibility is shifted to those that can make a farther-reaching impact. In the next episode, we go deeper into the complications many companies face when phasing out PFAS chemicals. and we answer the question, can a product truly be PFAS-free? If you want to learn more about what PFAS are, where they're found, the proven health effects, how you can limit your exposure, up-to-date news on PFAS, and how to get involved in PFAS regulatory efforts, visit toxicfreefuture.org, foodandwaterwatch.org, or PFAScentral.org. SnapLink Consulting provided expert fact-checking and guidance for the creation of this podcast. SnapLink Consulting provides corporate sustainability strategies and ESG support across a broad range of industries, including apparel, footwear, home furnishings, software, cosmetics, professional services, and more. Head to snaplinkconsulting.com to learn more and contact the experts to guide you through complex topics like CSRD, PFAS, greenhouse gas assessments, SBTI, CDP, EcoVadis, B Corp, and many more compliance and certification frameworks. Forever Chemicals is a Blackfooted Ferret production. All the source material for this episode can be found in the show notes or at theoutdoorminimalist.com/forever chemicals. As an independent podcast, we rely on listener support as our primary avenue for funding. If you like this show and our other content, consider donating to our GoFundMe. The link is in the show notes.